a special guest here on the telephone right now. He is Scott Jansen of Anchorage. He's formerly of Crookston, Minnesota, and he's been up in Alaska ever since he got out of school in 1995. Scott is a musher. He's a dog musher. He's also a mortician, and he's just completed his second Iditarod. And it just happens that along the way in this Iditarod, he made national news for his unique rescue of one of his dogs, Marshall. And we're going to talk to him about that and much more about the Iditarod race. Scott, welcome to the Roadhouse.
Oh, thank you very much. Thanks for having me.
Now, have you recovered? Iditarod is well known as probably, I think the nickname is the last great race. How many miles is that?
Well, this year was the northern route, so it was approximately 930 miles this year. And last year was the southern route, which was about 1,050 miles.
That's a long way to go, being pulled by a dog team. How fast do you move in general? How many miles an hour?
You don't want to be going too fast, and too fast being like even up in the 13-mile-an-hour range. The faster they run, just like a human, in fact, is the faster they run, the more prone they're going to be to getting like a wrist injury or possibly a shoulder injury. And so we average around 8 miles an hour. If you take the whole race course, including, of course, the mountains and such, we end up down around 4.5 miles an hour for the whole trip.
Mm-hmm. Is there a certain amount of hours that you like to run every day, just to take care of the dogs, but also to, it's a race, so, you know, you
right.
want to get there first.
Well, and you know, the dogs are the main thing, but the whole thing is gauging your dogs completely. A lot of mushers have a run-rest schedule, and they adhere to that run-rest schedule as close as they can. The musher who I was training with over the last year, Dean Osmar, and Dean was the 1984 winner of the Iditarod, and Dean said, you know, that number one, you need to watch your dogs. So if your dogs only look like, you know, say you went 6 hours and your dogs are tired, then it's time to camp. And you can tell when your dogs are starting to get tired. They start to lose focus. You know, they'll lean over and chat with each other every once in a while, and they won't have that perfect ears up, stare straight down the trail. And other days, you can run 11 hours, 12 hours, and the dogs are still raring to go when you get to the next checkpoint. So what I tried to do was I tried to gauge it on the dogs completely. For instance, the first day was a perfect running day, other than when we leave Willow, there is so much distraction for the dogs, and my team was real focused that first day, so instead of camping between Yetna and Squetna, I decided to run all the way to Squetna. And then the next day, my team was so charged up that when I came into Finger Lake, I told them at Finger Lake that I was going to take a half a bale of straw. And when you leave the Finger Lake checkpoint, it is incredibly beautiful. But you leave there, and you go up through these trees up over this hill, and you come down onto a river. And I planned on camping on that river. And when I got onto the river, I mean, you could have played the guitar with the tug lines on all of my dogs, and they were charging ahead so well. And so I ended up running the steps, stacked my dogs at the bottom of the steps, and then ran all the way into Rainy Pass. So at Rainy Pass, my time was looking pretty good.
When you say that you ended up running up the steps, what does that mean? What's the steps part of this course?
Well, the steps are a lot like, growing up around Crookston, you know, the only real hills we had were the edges by the rivers and things like that, where I know in your country you've got a lot more. But the steps would be, you know, like a highway in California traversing down a mountainside. They'll go up one way and then curve back and go down and then curve back and go down. But the steps are doing that, coming down the Happy River Gorge, and it's real narrow. I mean, there are times where you call your dog's chi at a corner, and before your sled breaks the corner around a tree, your lead dogs have already passed you 4 feet away down below you on the trail below.
Wow.
So it's filled with excitement. Last year, I ran the steps at the end of the pack, and every musher that goes down any hill, whether it be the steps or any of the hills, our breaks tend to turn all the snow into sugar, and we end up getting deep trenches in the snow, and that's what, in fact, happened in the Dalzell Gorge, because I gave my dogs a longer-than-usual rest at Rainy Pass.
So what that means essentially is that you're not able to slow them down like you would like to?
Well, you're not really on the slowing down, but the control of the dogs. The stopping power of the dogs is pretty much gone. And when you do get them to stop, it's like what happened to me with Marshall, it was pretty much a miracle I didn't lose my team.
Now, as long as we're talking about Marshall, this is one of the most unique stories that you'll hear anywhere of any time, was what happened with your dog, Marshall, one of 16 dogs that you started out with on this race. Maybe it's best just that you tell the story, I believe.
Okay, well, first of all, with Marshall, even though I had just bought Marshall last year, he's a 9-year-old dog, and he led me into Nome last year, but Marshall was a team dog for Paul Gebhardt for his whole life. And Paul had always said, you know, don't put Marshall in the lead because he won't leave a checkpoint. Where he ended up, after I lost all my leaders last year in Unalakleet, Marshall ended up taking me into Nome. And so I bought him from Paul. But the thing is that I've run Marshall since he was a puppy. I've been running dogs with Paul for more than 12 years now. And so I've got a real closeness to him. And we're going down what's called the Dalzell Gorge, and this is after leaving Rainy Pass. We do a slow climb up through the tundra, and it was snowing and blowing really hard that night. And it was probably when I got to the top of the mountain at 3,800 foot level. When I got to the top of the mountain, there's a sign there that says you're at the summit, and then pretty much your dogs disappear two by two over this edge. And that is the gorge. And we go down through the gorge, and the snow, even though at that point I was in the top 20, but the snow at that point is, we'd gotten so much, and all the breaks of all the sleds, the trenches were about 4 feet deep. And I'm only 5'5", so you got to aim your sled down these trenches. And if you get one runner up on top and one on the bottom, you're going down the gorge sideways. And so I was perfectly in the trenches. I was flying through, and all of a sudden I came out of a trench. And as I came out of the trench, Marshall dropped over. And Marshall, I mean, dogs will trip, and dogs will stumble. And it's not a very, it doesn't happen with all the dogs, but never with Marshall. So Marshall fell over, and I mean, he just went boom. And I stopped the team, and that's what the strange thing is that I was able to stop the team where I was at. I stopped the team and kicked my snow hook as far down into the snow as I could, but I knew it wasn't holding. And I ran up, and this all took me, you know, less than 2 minutes, I'm sure, in the heat of the moment. And I got up to Marshall, and I picked him up by his harness quick, and I said, "Come on, bud." And he fell down the other way. And that's when I saw his eyes. And he was, there's no making it any better. He was dead. The glazed look that happens when a person or an animal dies, and he was gone. No heartbeat, no respiration. And so right away I breathed into his nose. First I pulled out through his nose to try to, I thought in the back of my mind maybe he had shoved his nose full of snow in the trench. And so I pulled back out, and then I started breathing into him, and I could feel his chest going up as I'd breathe in, so I would rub my hand around on him and push down on his heart at the same time. And I kept doing that, and I kept doing that, and, you know, it seemed like an eternity, but it was probably, realistically about 5 minutes. I remember looking up at the sky and, you know, saying, "Please, God, you know, let him come back," and I was sobbing, and it's even hard to talk about now, but I was sobbing, and the snow was going through my headlamp. It was the most surreal moment of my life, and I looked down at him, and I was petting him, and my tears were falling on his snoot, and I said, "Man, I love you, dude. Please come back." And I breathed into his nose, and he hacked back into my mouth, and then I petted him, and I rubbed his chest, and pretty soon his eyes became lucid again, and he's looking at me like, "Hey, Dad, what are we doing down here?"
But wow.
The wild thing was none of my other dogs, and this is a hard-charging team of dogs. I mean, I came in 39th place, but I helped two friends in the race, and if it wouldn't have been for me holding back to help those friends, I know I would have been in the top 30. And so, I mean, I had a hard-charging team, but the fact that they stopped, every one of them stopped. They sat down. They started whimpering, and I mean, these dogs never whimper. They'll sit and bark and tug at the lines before they're going to whimper. And then when I put Marshall in my sled and I called up the team, you know, I talked to him and I said, guys, we got to get Marshall to the doctor. And I said, so I'll keep the brakes on, but you keep me on the trail. And I mean, we went through the Dalzell Gorge and we were rocking. I mean, I haven't looked at my GPS to see what the time is through there, but I had to have been going 12 and 13 miles an hour. And then I leaned over to check on Marshall. And when I leaned over, it was a bonehead move. My sled went to the right. I caught a stump with my brake, and I ended up shearing one of my runners right in half. So I went 18 miles into Rhone with a dog who I love that I thought was dying, and a runner broken on my sled. I thought I was going to have to scratch out of the race. But, you know, it was one of those races where it was filled with adversity for me. You got a lot of time to think when you're out there on the trail. I even thought of tests, and I thought, is this, when am I going to start blaming it on the big guy upstairs? I'm not, you know, we make our own bed, and we got to sleep in it and deal with the situation as they come up. And the feeling of getting to Nome, even in 39th place, the feeling of getting to Nome is a feeling of, you know, God dang it, I can do anything. So it's well worth it, without a doubt.
That story that you just told about Marshall is just a heartwarming story, and it's just an amazing story. What actually was his? Had he just engorged too much snow? What exactly was his problem there when he actually, as you mentioned, and as my co-host said before this interview off air, you would know when somebody or something is dead.
Yep. And he, what happened was after we sent him back, and we had him checked for a brain tumor, we had him checked for heart problems, we had him checked for everything. And all they can figure is one of the things I said the night that I was interviewed, and I, by the way, didn't know I was being videotaped that night. I don't know if you saw the video, but I was rubbing my face, and it was a pretty rough night for me in Nikolai. And I didn't know I was being videoed at that point. I completely lost where I was going with that one.
As far as what was wrong with the dog that...
Okay. So what I had said there was it was like a guy my age having a heart attack. Mm. And as it turned out, when we got him back, we sent him to the best veterinary people here in Anchorage and that the Iditarod recommends too. And he basically did. He had a heart attack. And, you know, the chances of that happening with me or you or Marshall is all... in there, you know, I was interviewed in Crookston and they asked me, so what did I learn from this? And I said, well, I learn a lot from every race I do, whether it's a 300 or 150 mile race. But she said, so are you not going to be taking 9-year-old dogs on the race any longer? And I said, actually, 5 of the dogs I finished with were 9-year-old dogs. Last year, I ran the race with 11-year-old leader. And, you know, it's how you take care of those dogs. And those dogs want to be out there. Now, Marshall is retired. He's full benefits, lives in the house.
Full benefits?
Yeah, we're gonna start bringing him to the funeral home. And, you know, everybody wants to see Marshall. And so I'm going to start bringing him down here. But he went from being an outside dog to an inside dog literally overnight. And he's just the best pal.
Wow. Yeah, that is amazing. So your dog now, as far as a dog's life goes, what does full benefits mean?
Oh, you know, he lives in the house. He crashes pretty much wherever he wants. And we've made the determination that carpets can be replaced. But, you know, he has gone from being an outside dog to not having an accident in the house, which is amazing. He's 9 years old, you know? But we have an understanding, and I've always felt that with Marshall. But I had another dog, his name was Thunder, and Thunder was my best dog ever. And Thunder died about 5 years ago, and I brought half of his cremated remains with on the trail. Mm. And I had Thunder in the basket when this happened to Marshall.
Wow.
And then when I got to Rhone, I fixed my sled, got my stuff ready, and then I realized that I was going to scatter Thunder in Rhone. So it was a pretty emotional day for Scotty that day.
Mm, I should say so. You obviously, these dogs are with you year-round, so you're spending time with them in the summer as well as all winter long. You must get, as anybody can infer from this story, you must get really emotionally attached to the animals that are your partners.
Oh yeah, definitely, and that is one of the sayings that everybody says in the mushing community is if you take care of your dogs, they'll take care of you, And last year, for instance, I was running across Norton Sound, and it was about 2 or 3 o'clock in the morning, and it was a big storm, and it was the only night we had wind going across there, and it was the very last night of my race, and as I was going across, and all of a sudden I fell asleep, and I woke up, and I looked in front of me right away through the snow, and my dogs were gone, and the feeling inside was like, oh no, and I looked, and here Marshall had turned the whole team around, and they were all laying right next to my sled, and I just said, ready. And that's my commands. I have a ready and all right. So when I say ready, my dogs straighten out the line. And when I said ready, Marshall straightened out the whole line. Every dog leans forward into their harnesses. And then I say all right, and that means it's time to go.
Wow. Yeah, it's an amazing partnership that I don't think I can understand, nor most of my listeners. You just have to be there.
Well, and one of the things I've told people forever is that you know, we all have the times where, when those of us that have children, when the kids are little and you come home from work after working a long day and, you know, or what have you, and your kids are so excited to see you, you know, daddy, daddy, daddy. And then when they reach about 7, maybe 8 years old, you know, you walk in the house and they're sitting on the couch doing their homework and they're like, hey, Dad, that's the time you need to buy a dog.
You know, I was just thinking about your rescue of Marshall, and I was thinking of my own capabilities that I don't know that I would have thought to try to resuscitate a dog that died in that manner, and yet you did right away. You knew what to do, and it worked.
Yeah, and that, even for myself, but you know, that's the thing about CPR, too. I was telling my mom and dad, we went back to Minnesota for my niece's baby shower here last weekend, and I was telling my mom and dad, because dad was saying, yeah, we did that CPR thing, we learned how to do that, and I said, you know what, Dad, it isn't worth anything unless you do it right away. You've got to hold all your emotions inside, and even though I was sobbing, tears were falling down on Marshall's nose, I know for a fact that if I wouldn't have done what I did when I did it, he would be dead right now. And it's one of the best, most satisfying things that I've ever done in my life. In fact, I got an email from a person, and he said that his dog had had a grand mal seizure in their front yard. It was a 3-year-old lab, and I don't even know where he's from, somewhere down south. And he said that he got his dog into the car with his little brother and his wife, and as he was rushing to the emergency room, for the vet emergency room, the dog died in his back seat. And he stopped the car, and he did what he heard me say in my story. And he said, thanks to you, my best friend didn't die in front of my little brother and my wife, and I still have him today. And he ended it with, thanks for making me a better man.
Wow.
And, you know, I tell you, I cried like a baby. I mean, the comments I got from people that realized the fact that to mushers, the dogs are everything. We can make a sled, we can fix a sled, we can break a sled, but the dogs are what are going to make it to Nome for us, you know? Taking care of them, having enough food at every checkpoint, doing everything that we have to do for them so that you can finish the line with strong dogs. And I'm very proud of the fact that the last 2 years, my dogs finished very strong. They had extremely good muscle tone. And, you know, one of my dogs wouldn't eat, so I fed her all of my meatloaf sandwiches. I ended up losing 22 pounds on the trail.
Well, luckily, your dog didn't lose 22 pounds.
Yeah, exactly. I did it for him. Just made his pull a lot easier.
We've been speaking with Scott Jansen, and Scott is from Anchorage. He just completed the Iditarod, the last great race. In route, he found himself rescuing one of his favorite dogs, Marshall, who suffered what apparently was a heart attack. And just an amazing story, Scott, of how you were able to save your dog. And not only that, but finish a race like that, which I don't know how many teams start out, but it's a real struggle to go that many miles and who knows what kind of conditions every year, and I'm sure there's other problems along the way as well.
Oh yeah, that's pretty much everything that can come up does come up, and in fact, I hit a stump and broke my bridle. We use the same terms as they use when they have a horse and buggy. And I hit a stump and broke my bridle, and I flipped over the front of the sled and landed in front of it, but I caught my snow hooks when they went flying past. and I dragged down the trail about 200 yards with my stow hook bouncing and one other in my hand, and I stopped the team, and I said, when I told that story at the banquet in Nome, I said, I think now I know what it's like to go temporarily insane. I said, I finally stopped the team, and I had 15 dogs charging through the buffalo tunnels, and there was no snow on the trail, just dirt. And I stopped the team, and I ran back to my sled and realized I was laughing uncontrollably. So I figured I was really having fun or I was going nuts, a little bit of both.
You know, I've been behind a dog sled a few times. One of the first times I did it, there was a 90-degree turn right away in the course, and the musher told me, whatever you do, don't let go of the sled. So, sure enough, you get around that corner, you're getting dragged along in the snow, but you don't let go of the sled. And you might tell everybody it's a quick answer, what happens if you do?
Well, then you're all of a sudden all by yourself.
Yep.
Pretty darn quickly. It actually happened to me once this year in training. I was 12 miles away from the truck, and I called my business partner, who was my best friend, too, Jordan Eastman. I called Jordan up. It was 12:01 in the morning. I said, you know, Jordan, the way pretty much everything I do turns into an adventure. He goes, what now? I go, I lost my team. I'm 12 miles away from the truck, and it's 22 below zero.
Yeah, that's pretty lonesome out there, isn't it?
Yeah, that's for sure. But yeah, the northern lights and the sights and the animals and all the dogs make it all worth it.
Well, Scott, I want to thank you so much for giving us your time. Is there a... you're best known as the Mushing Mortician. Do you have a website where people can go to learn more about you and your race and your dogs?
Yeah, we sure do. Do they have the Mushing Mortician set up? Okay, it would be Mushing with no G, M-U-S-H-I-N, mortician.com.
Great. People can
and
go there.
And then on Facebook, my daughter also has a lot of updates on Facebook, and she pretty much has a blow-by-blow of the whole race, when I came in, when I left, all that sort of fun stuff.
Great. Scott, thanks so much.
All right. Well, thanks for having me.
Bye-bye.